I don't think I've ever known his real name or her real
I
name.
Asked a long time ago, and I forget.
Are they from Australia or no? Or BC?
I feel like they're from far away.
Molly.
Molly. Yes.
Oh.
I knew it was a girl. Or it. She.
It.
Jeez. Wow. Nice. Wow. Molly, I'm tired. Please forgive me. Where are you from, Molly? Oregon.
Oregon.
You were close, sir. You were close. You said BC. Molly, she is from Salem, Oregon.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 38, recorded live on Wednesday, October 10th, 2012. My name is Joel Duggan, and you can find my work at starcrossedonline.com. To my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of cardboardtreehouse.com. Peyton, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, sir. I'm doing very well.
Good, good, good.
Yeah. You can find me most days sitting in front of my computer, locked in my basement. So yeah.
Oh, one of those. It's been one of those months, I think. I feel like September bleeding into October has been kind of a locked in the basement kind of, you know, month for most people. The back to school, there's a lot of work stuff going on. Everybody's kind of, you know, just stuck.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I always said, it's your worst day animating is better than your best day at McDonald's.
Very, very true. You know. I've been having some frustrating times with the home office lately as well, and I just keep on reminding myself that even though I'm drawing yet more horses and yet more ponies for children's toys, I am thankful to have the work, and, you know, it's not bagging groceries. Yeah. So there are worse
things. Not that there's anything wrong with that?
No. No, but I mean, for people that have specific training, it kind of sucks to then not do that and not use that.
Yeah.
Agreed. Well, it's just the two of us tonight, if you haven't guessed. Usually Chad is here. And actually, this is a good point for me to remind everybody that I believe Chad is going to be back for one more week, and then he's going to be taking some parental leave from the Citadel Cafe because his baby girl is due on November 1st. I don't know when she's going to arrive exactly, but, you know, that's the surprise, the first surprise of many, I'm sure, for Chad and his wife, Julie. So I am going to be looking for people to fill in, and I've started the email. I've got several of our podcasting friends in the CC list to come on as guests on the show. So if I've already talked to you about this, then fantastic. Thank you for agreeing to do it, and I will sort things out once I am organized, which means that I will have a Google Doc with show dates, show title, not titles, but show numbers. And then we can decide, you know, who's going to do what and where and who's going to be able to join us over the next few weeks. We're probably going to look at probably the better part of 6 weeks to replace Chad on the show for a little bit, just to kind of give him lots of time to help.
And also perhaps if there's any listeners or, you know, who listen to the show every week, you feel like they might have something to add, they can always contact us through our email and see if they want to hop in as a guest, maybe?
Absolutely. That's a great idea. I would love to have some listeners on the show. I mean, several of the podcasting people I've contacted are also listeners, but it would be great to have some people that we have not yet talked to on the Citadel Cafe.
Yeah, maybe they add Molly or someone, I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, maybe Molly, you know, the person in the chat room right now, Molly, a.k.a. TCC fan, looking at you, Molly.
Oh, but you know, if she was trying to have any sort of, you know, you know, try to be anonymous or anything, we just totally blew that for her. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Wrong show.
Yeah.
Wrong show. We're putting ourselves out there. If Molly wants to come on the show, she's going to have to, you know, mention who she is and that she's from Washington. No. Oregon.
Washington.
No, she's not in Washington. No. We were talking about Twilight before the show.
Well,
more accurately, we were making fun of Twilight before the show. And Molly was kind enough to point out that no, she's not from that place, the place of the Twilight and the things and the sparkly abs. She is not from that place.
Sparkly abs.
Yeah, so that's good.
What a great Halloween costume that would be. Just go around with no shirt on, just covered in glitter.
Somebody has done it.
Don't work and just let the gut hang.
You know somebody has done it, right?
Yeah.
There you go. You got to have the big old hairy trucker that is a Twilight fan, right? Because that's what he reads when he's away from home, away from the wife. You know,
brush the abs in. That'll be airbrushed abs.
Nice, nice. Well, yeah. So I guess to get back onto what I was saying about people coming in and listeners, it would be fantastic to do that because we're going to be coming up on our first full year of podcasting in November.
Mm.
And I don't think Chad's going to be here for that. He might be able to pop in for a show briefly, but he probably won't be able to stay for the whole thing. He's going to be kind of playing that one by ear.
No cake for him.
No cake for Chad. The cake is a lie anyway, so it's okay. If you happen to be new to the Citadel Cafe, this is normally where myself, Chad, and Peyton come to hang out and talk about the fun things that we've been into lately. We generally talk about geeky sci-fi fantasy stuff, but we've been broadening our horizons as of late. We cover anything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. So I guess before I've got a bit of a list because I really haven't been doing much show content lately in terms of what we normally stick to, but I've got kind of a lot to talk about in terms of just what's been going on with my life in general. What's new with you, Peyton? Anything before I dive into my big long rant?
Just working, being a dad, all that fun stuff. Yeah, the boy's grown like a monster. He's, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, every day he has new things coming out of his mouth. He's cracking us up.
He's almost three now, right?
Yeah, he's like, you know, he's 4 months from being three. You know, we were at the in-laws for Thanksgiving, which was fun. And he has a four-year-old cousin, so they were running around chasing each other. And, of course, you know, they bang into each other and all that stuff and the screaming and the crying and everything else. But he had a grand time. But on the way back... whenever Lee and I are in the car, he always interrupts. And first he was just screaming at us to stop talking, but we've gotten him into the habit now of saying, you know, say excuse me or I have a question. So he screams out from the back, I have a question. So we stop talking. And normally he'll say, I have a question. And there'll be a big pause and then he'll say, ice cream. And I'm like, okay, that's not a question. But so anyway, so he said, you know, I have a question again. And then I said, you know, and ice cream is not a proper response. And there was this long pause. And he said, different ice cream. And I'm like, okay, perfect. Yeah, he cracked the two of us right off.
That is fantastic.
But yeah, that's the type of stuff he's coming up with all the time.
That's great. I mean, you're going to have to start making some mental notes or writing some of this stuff down because, I mean, as an illustrator and an animator, there's got to be some gems in there, for books, especially with the way that books are going digitally lately with, you know, animations and stuff like that built in. That would be very cool.
The other day he jumped off into our living room from the top stairs and Lee said, you know, good job. He said, Mommy, I have skills.
Oh my God. Where did he hear that?
I think I might have said it to him one time. You got skills or something like that.
Oh, right.
He picks up on it.
He's like a little mimic now.
Yeah. So you got to watch the cursing and swearing. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. Well, my week was full of family as well. Peyton mentioned Thanksgiving to you listeners. And for those of you that don't know, we're Canadian. So Thanksgiving was this past weekend for us. And actually, Christmas was this past weekend for me, or more accurately, Christmoctober. Which happens to be a completely made-up holiday that happens on Thanksgiving that's got nothing to do with Thanksgiving at all, except for the turkey. My parents, my mom and my stepdad, they winter in Florida, and they leave in about a week and a half. So rather than travel back at the holidays, which is expensive and problematic and all kinds of oh hell no for them, we do Christmas early with them before they leave. So the gift exchange happens, but only between parents and kids. And this was kind of fun because it was, well, I mean, it's always fun, but this was a special year because Andrea is living with her boyfriend, Greg, and of course, Jocelyn and I are living together. So we had some long-term significant others to include in Christmoctober this year, which was super fun. Mom was very excited about that because, it's nice to have six or eight people around the table, and we had six this year. It was fun. You know, like I can never turn down my mom's home cooking, and I Jocelyn and I ate so much food at 5 p.m. on Saturday that we didn't eat again until 4 p.m. Sunday.
And
we weren't even hungry. We just decided we should probably eat something before we get headaches because we knew that we would need food, but we weren't hungry at all. I had two big plates of dinner, two pieces of pie plus Christmas cookies. Like it was just a slam fest of awesome. And I also happened to pick up some pretty geeky stuff for Christmas. The Sinterklaas was good to me, and I was able to walk away happy with a couple of new Zitz comics. It's a comic strip by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman that I'm a huge fan of. And the Avengers on Blu-ray, which Chad just mentioned last week on the show. Or no, week before. I haven't cracked it yet, because I'm still trying to sort out the issues with my home theater. I haven't been able to update the firmware or anything on stuff like that yet. You'd think that would be simple, but it's not. It's not at all. And even for a techie guy like me, it's not at all. But beyond that, I took the weekend to really relax. I didn't get back to work until very late in the afternoon on Monday, because Jocelyn was off until Monday, or off until Tuesday. And I wanted to spend some time with her. So we ended up having video game dates, which I thought was very geeky and very cool. We've been doing the whole World of Warcraft thing for a little while, and we've got our Pandarans to level 10 now. We chose the Horde side. But in the process, we got to see some really cool vistas and some really cool in-game animation. And Peyton and I had sent you some screen caps over the weekend.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Just to show you. I mean, there are some things that I still complain about. Wow, there are some mechanics that are old, but it is an old game. And the things that are impressive about the new expansion are what they're doing with in-game cinematics. So, I mean, everybody is familiar with World of Warcraft and the animated cinematics that they do for trailers for their game, which I think are... It's not Blizzard. Blizzard might do them in-house now, but they hired somebody else to do them. Do you remember who's the animation house behind those?
No.
I don't remember them either. Anyway, they're very, you can tell right away when it's a Blizzard cinematic. I mean, they're gorgeous, beautiful, beautiful stuff. But it takes them like years to put together a 5-minute trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So the in-game cinematics, when they're telling stories about what's happening, is a lot better. And it's a lot better for them to tell the story with the in-game animation, because of course it's a lot easier to do. But the new technology that they're using on these new Pandaren models is really cool. They've got lip sync, they gesture with their hands, they've hired animators that know what they're doing. There's dynamic timing and gestures and body language and stuff, as opposed to just like talking Muppet heads. It's very, very cool. And it was very engaging for what I previously was used to with World of Warcraft. So we had a lot of fun with that. I've also been spending a lot of time getting to know the Mass Effect universe, which is a huge thing with console gamers. It's a very story-driven, I guess it's a RPG cover shooter, and I've been into that for the last few days. And Jocelyn played Mass Effect 2 and 3, but did not play Mass Effect 1. She kind of just read the story on it and caught up, and then decided to jump in when everybody else was playing Mass Effect 2. So she's really enjoying playing Mass Effect 1 with me, even though it's a single-player game. She's really helping me out, because it is a deep, complicated universe. And I have to give them kudos for creating a sci-fi universe that is really quite different than most sci-fi we're familiar with. I mean, like, there's Star Trek, there's Star Wars, and then I would argue that Aliens is probably the next biggest kind of, like, canon.
Well, you've probably got things like, you know, Battlestar and Deep Space Nine. Well, not just Deep Space Nine, but what's the other one? Babylon 5 and those things.
Would you not think that the Alien movies would be the next biggest in terms of popularity?
Yeah, they could be. There's also, I guess, catching up, that would be the Doctor Who franchise.
But I'm talking more like classic sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
But yeah, no, you're right. Doctor Who would be up there as well. Anyway, they've managed to create this world in Mass Effect, which is very kind of corporate. There's this really weird mix of the corporation, which reminds me of Aliens, but also military, which reminds me of Star Trek. But it's less science and exploration, more guns and bad guys. So it's got that Star Wars element to it. But they've managed to create this whole thing without really borrowing too heavily, where you kind of go, oh yeah, that's just like, you know, Star Wars or Star Trek or Aliens or whatever, insert whatever, you know, existing franchise you know of here.
I'm trying to keep it original, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I really like the whole idea of like biotics and specters and tech and stuff like that. And all it is just a different way of explaining different powers for different characters and different things like that. the motivations of the characters. It's very character driven. It's very well written. I'm enjoying the story aspect of it now that I've had a chance to really get into the game. I was kind of poo-pooing it at first. The graphics aren't the greatest because it's Mass Effect 1. It's like a 6-year-old game. So, I mean, for consoles, that's old. So I've been slogging through that. One of the character designs, everybody likes them. They're the Krogan. They're the big guys. They're the guys that, you know, knock heads and ask questions later. And they're very unique in their design, but they don't look all that mobile. And everybody uses the same guns in this universe. Like, they're all kind of these little compact things that go in your back. And the Krogan is this great big guy. And I'm used to these great big guys having great big guns. And he doesn't. You know, your guns get more powerful, but they just get little, like, augmentations on them. Like, little internal things. Like, they don't actually change the outward appearance that much. They change color, shape a little bit, but not really the overall size. So you've got this great big guy. And he's got this little assault rifle. And no matter how powerful it gets, he's got the same assault rifle. And it looks silly. He's also one of those characters that is much too high and forward with little legs.
Okay.
So it doesn't quite balance out literally. Like, it really makes him look like he's going to fall over all the time. So I feel like they could have done some more there. A lot of the other alien characters, and this is where it does remind me of Star Trek, is they're very humanoid. They just happen to have different heads with, like, you know, tentacles or, you know, funny things around their mouths or whatever. Some of the more unique aliens, like a floating jellyfish that talks telepathically and stuff like that. They're not really in the game that long. They're just kind of like the store vendor or, you know, other people that you run into very briefly. But so far I'm enjoying it. And it's a really unique way to spend time with Jocelyn because she loves video games and she's really enjoying watching this stuff happen because she knows about it. She's played and completed the series, but she's never seen the beginning of it. So it's kind of like a prequel for her, which is kind of cool. So, and she's been able to help me out with, like, oh, well, this is this type of character and they're good at these things. Like, tech people are good at, you know, deciphering codes and breaking into different places, but they are not so shit hot at fighting people, you know. And then you've got biotics, which is like almost like force users, like from Star Wars. And you can amplify that stuff, and they're kind of good to have in some situations, but not in others. And so it's pretty cool. Like, I'm really digging it so far. I wish I had more time. I've been so busy with work, in the aftermath of, the successful funding of StarCross Volume 1.
Which is awesome.
Well, yes, thank you. That I've just not had a whole lot of time. So it's just these little windows of time when Jocelyn gets home at, 6 o'clock in the evening, till about 8:30 when she goes to bed, to get up again for work the next day because she's working such long hours, that I spend, you know, playing a game, hanging out with her, having dinner, etc., and then I'm back to work. So I haven't had a lot of time to play it, but it's I can certainly see why people have just, you know, devoured it and spent long weekends, days off work, you know, playing.
Yeah, playing the game and making mods for it as well.
Yeah. Do they mod Mass Effect?
Yeah, actually, there's one that I saw the other day on awesomewinner.com. And okay. I was just trying to find out what you were talking there. So it's kind of sad, actually, but someone made a mod that will make all the women in the game naked.
Oh, jeez.
And it's pretty sad. So,
well, it's funny. This will tie into something I wanted to discuss later in the show. But you can tell that all of these designs, or most of these designs, were conceived of by men.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very Star Trek-y jumpsuit. Everything's very tight. A lot of the designs of the clothing for women are revealing in ways that they don't need to be. I mean, some of the people on my team, I mean, they're in military uniforms. So, I mean, they're covered. But it's still like a leotard, you know, it's kind of like the superhero type thing. In their defense, so are the guys. All the guys have got, you know, armored, you know, plates over tights. So, I mean, it's everybody's kind of in tight clothing. But yeah, you can tell that there's a lot of boobage happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of my week. I've got a couple of short things for movies and video, but I really haven't. You know, I don't have a lot more to report on in terms of the time spent because it's all been work, and I don't think we need to bore the nice people with tales of you know, slaving away over Cintiqs and tablets. So what's been on the television or the movie screen for you this week?
Well, just, you know, the odds and ends here and there. I watched, while I was working that day on Netflix, I watched, rewatched Casino, which is just a great film.
Casino.
Yeah, it came out. I've seen it. What year did that come out?
Pacino?
Yeah, and no, De Niro. De Niro's in it with Pesci. Joe Pesci.
Right.
And,
yes.
Yeah, it's just a great film. I you know, it's just the you know, the bad guy gets it in the end, sort of thing, and you know, but it's just, you know, well directed and just a fun little film to watch. You know, mm-hmm. Sharon Stone did a really good job in it, and you know, I've always been a fan of some of her work, not all of it, of course. But,
yeah.
That particular role was a good role for her, I think. So
when did that come out? Do we remember?
One second, I will check. Casino.
Okay. I get confused because you see there's Casino and then there's another one that's very similar, and then you've got stuff like Ocean's 11 and...
That came out in 95, sorry.
Oh, 95, wow. So that's like, you know, pushing...
Yeah, I think Heat came out around the same time frame as well.
17 years old, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, but yeah, no, it's just a fun little film, you know. De Niro at the top of his game, I think, as well as Pesci, too, you know. There's the scene when he... just sort of goes into a guy with a pen in a bar is quite funny.
Oh, right.
Anyway, just, you know, well done. And the other thing is, you know, you mentioned that Jotham was watching Big Bang, and I was watching a bit of that as well, but watching it on CTV.ca, I have the app on my iPad, I was trying to watch it on that, but they're not updating their app with actual shows that you can watch.
Oh.
So I go into it, and it's on, like, the last two episodes of the season. The first two episodes of the season are on the website, and you can watch them there. And then I go into the app, and on the app, it just has character bios and promotional stuff and stuff. But it doesn't actually have, you know, the actual show there themselves. There's no videos available for the show, which I'm like, you're 2 weeks into the season. You should be able to have at least one of the episodes on there, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, and I'm not quite sure if it's a policy thing or if someone's dropped the ball or what, but it's quite frustrating. So.
I feel like Hulu in the States does 10 days. So well, you might have to wait for the third episode to come out before you can see them. Let us know, you know, next week if things change. But
yeah.
I think you're right. I think once the second episode is airing, the first episode should be able to be viewed.
Well, I just find it odd because episode 1 and 2... have aired, and they're both available on their website. So I'm not quite sure what the difference is between the website and the app, because they both still play commercials and the same commercial break periods, right?
You're seeing a lot of resistance to this kind of stuff in larger media companies, I've found. The Frame Rate, one of the shows that I watch on Twit, talks about it a lot, where, you know, most of the time that website means you have to go to a computer. So for you... In your studio in the basement, you know, you're good at 21 inch iMac?
24, yeah.
24 inch iMac. So big screen, big enough to watch that show on if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
But not the most comfortable place. I mean, that's where you work. You want to go to your living room and chill out with your wife and watch it on
or
TV.
Just, you know, watch it on my lunch break, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So the tablet is much more mobile and much more casual. And if people were able to consume it in that kind of a casual way, I think that these bigger companies are fearing that then they will cut the cable and stop subscribing to cable. They will lose subscribers.
Yeah. But a channel like CTV is off air anyway.
Yeah, well, I know. And this is what I mean. Like it's yeah. so asked. There's so many things about it that are asked backwards. Like if you just said, you know, it's available on our website 48 hours to maybe a full week after it airs on the network on air, you can view it on your iPad. You can then AirPlay that iPad in our app, you know, to the TV. And I don't think these larger companies realize how much of a captive audience they have if they do that. You're in their app. It is a pain in the ass to then stop the AirPlay, switch the app, and go to somebody else's app. It's a lot easier on your TV. You can just change channels. You know, if you don't like the commercial that's on, you just... change channels
and within the app there's no change in the channels for the commercial because there's only one commercial. It's 15 seconds long
exactly
and it's, you know, it takes the place of those four commercials, so
yeah. And then on the flip side of that, the demographic on the ass end of it is that they know exactly who's watching.
Yeah,
you know, like you're tied to any number of, you know, I mean, you're probably signing into the app. I mean, I'm not you specifically, but people out there have the option to sign into the CTV app, or I mean, choose your provider above, you know, app with Facebook or Twitter or your Apple account or whatever. And there's going to be anything from the very least an email address to possibly Facebook and social media all the way down to a credit card associated with your profile on these accounts. And they'll have access to that information should you allow it. And then the 15-second advertisement that you have to, quote-unquote, put up with is then possibly going to even be more targeted to you.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you're going to watch an ad, I'd rather watch an ad for razors than tampons. You know, I mean, call it a thing. You know, I remember when I was in university, I used to laugh because one of my favorite pastimes and guilty pleasures was Dawson's Creek. You may laugh now. I enjoyed it. It was a good escape from my stresses of school, but it was mostly a female demographic. So a lot of the commercials were about tampons or other girly shows and stuff like that. So, I mean, the commercials for me were really kind of like, oh, more commercials. And I just like nothing at all was interesting. So, it was a lot different, you know, when you get online and the commercials and stuff and advertisements start to be more targeted towards you, which I don't really mind as long as they're being upfront of like, do you want to allow us to scan your information and then provide you with more accurate advertising? Yes, sure. If I
they can even do a thing like if you sign in with your social media, you can get access to the show a day earlier or something
sure.
like that.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That'd be a great idea. But I think that the marketing people for these television channels themselves are in a bad way. There was some show I was watching on television a little while ago, and they had four ads within one commercial break, but four ads were for four different car companies, competing cars. So it was a Ford, there was a Chrysler, there was a Toyota, and then there was a Honda ad. The Honda ad ran last, and that's the only ad I remembered.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is an absolute waste of ad revenue, and it is just, it's useless. Like, why, you know, if I was the client, and I said, I want to advertise on Big Bang Theory, for example, you know, and then I watch it, and I see my ad, but then I see two of my direct competitors in the same ad space, I'd be gone. I'd be going somewhere else. It's useless, right?
Yeah. So. I wonder if there's ever been a venture in the opposite direction where an advertiser starts a network and the only advertising on that network is for their stuff. Like, for example, a General Electric runs an online, say they started an online television network and then they got licenses to show different shows.
I know Hallmark has done that with like made for TV movies and stuff on like the Women's Network or what have you, where like all the advertising is just Hallmark ads and the entire thing is one giant Hallmark ad, right?
Yeah.
You've got product placement and stuff, but I don't think it'd really be viable to have it just, I think, at least not broadcast. You can do it online.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm talking online. Maybe it's more like a YouTube channel. Like maybe if well, what's a really big brand for like the quote unquote young hip online people? Like, the punchy ads from like Axe deodorant or Old Spice.
Yeah.
Like Old Spice does some really, really fun viral video ads. And if they had, or I'm sure they have, a YouTube channel, which was then more than just advertisements. Like you'd get your fun Old Spice advertisement, but then you would also get whatever show they happen to be either running, owning, licensing, whatever. Like say Big Bang Theory. You know, just decided to be on the Old Spice Network. I mean, it would be a way for that show to make more money. Or possibly it's maybe an independent thing. Maybe it's something like The Guild or, you know, another independent venture where, you know, they're putting it on the network, the channel, the online channel of an advertiser as opposed to the reverse, you know, which would be the independent online channel trying to find advertising. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see whether that would be a symbiotic relationship or not.
Well, you know what? I think Kevin Smith might be running a model similar to that with his entire SMOD network.
Yeah.
Because he started off just doing, like, you know, his feature films, created his entire ViewAskew universe around that. Now he has him and Scott Moe just started up the SMODcast. And then from there, all of his other buddies came in and started making these shows. And now he has an entire podcast network. And now he has television shows that he's incorporating into this. And he's coming like this big media mogul, which is really quite funny. But anyway, but he's also tied in with his brand, you know, ViewAskew and all that entire universe. He's tied that in with the social network and media. So like he has, the last count I saw was like 1.6, 1.7 million Twitter followers, right?
Right.
So, Anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's, if you can, there's some people out there that are able to grasp it, you know, yeah. I mean, I'll.
He was always an early adopter anyway, you know, he had this. Yeah. This is, you know, chat rooms and moderation and all that stuff, right?
But yeah, whatever. Well, the people that are, you see excelling now, like the Twit Network, like Frogpants, like a lot of the things that I consume, are people that have been doing it for 10 yeah. to 15 years professionally and are now able to earn their livings doing it, possibly even employ people doing it. Mm-hmm. And they really, they get it. They understand it's about a niche audience. It's not about appealing to everybody. And advertisers kind of have the opposite view. They want everybody to buy their product. They're not just looking for a niche market. So yeah, maybe that's the difference.
Hmm. Yeah, I think advertisers are still operating under the inflatable gorilla at the car dealership, right?
Yes.
You know, you're like, okay, look over here at the inflatable gorilla, now buy a car. But I've never wanted to buy a car based on what inflatable toy they have in front of a car dealership.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'd be happier with a sign that has pricing on it, you know?
Yeah.
Great big banner flying behind an airplane is just fine by me, you know? Leasing starts at 15 grand. Okay. Still can't afford a car, but now I know.
Yeah. Now I know I can't afford it.
Thanks for the reminder. Appreciate it. You know, I'm walking from here on out. That's interesting. One of the things that I've, speaking of being up in the air, one of the things that I took in, not on live television, though I'm sure it was broadcast by some live news network, was the SpaceX launch. Did you see this?
I didn't see SpaceX launch. I saw the guy in the suit, but that got canned. But
that got canceled because of like high winds or something.
Yeah. They only need like anything more than 2 kilometers an hour, he can't go or something. No, right?
What the guy skydiving from the stratosphere is attempting is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I didn't really look a whole lot into that because it didn't happen. So I have yet to really kind of fully understand what and why he's doing it. I think it's just to say that he did.
Well, I think as well the suit they're using could be like a prototype for the next generation spacesuit. So.
Oh, okay, right on.
There's some big money behind it. So.
Yeah. Well, speaking of big money, SpaceX is, if anybody doesn't know, it's the private space launch and space program funded by lots of different people with lots and lots of money. But it was a successful launch on Sunday evening of the Dragon capsule, which is now today docked with the International Space Station. And it was delivering supplies, groceries, and some ever important products to deal with waste and urine and stuff.
Okay.
So it was a really interesting thing to see. There was I was watching the Weird Things podcast, which was doing a live show on Twit. Tom Merritt was guesting. And a few, Justin Robert Young was hosting along with Brian Brushwood. They're the regular hosts. And then their co-host managed to get a media pass as a correspondent at Cape Canaveral. Which has been Cape Canaveral, I think is what it's currently named. Anyway, he was there. Some other podcasters I recognize were there. And the feed that they were showing was a feed from his cell phone. So it wasn't the greatest in terms of quality, because it was over Skype and there was a lot of people in the area sending a lot of different signals, obviously back to their respective news networks. However, I mean, it was at night and the sky lit up like it was the middle of the day. And it was the coolest thing to see that go up and to know that it was a private venture. Because as far as I can tell, given the information I was given on the podcast, NASA is no longer going to the moon. They're no longer exploring locally, quote unquote, locally. They're focusing on Mars and beyond and, possibly satellite launches and stuff. So this SpaceX thing is focusing on local, like the moon and the International Space Station and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it was very, very interesting. And it was really cool to know that I don't need cable TV to see that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really happy that the Twit Network or any other network out there online is picking up these feeds and showing them. I think the SpaceX had a YouTube channel and had a, you know, its own coverage and stuff like that, and I'm sure it was in high def and stuff like and whatever, but I wanted the commentary of people that I'm used to listening to, that I know are into this and I know are going to give me some information that I otherwise wouldn't get. So it was a really cool way to watch it, and I really enjoyed enjoyed the podcast. I didn't stay for the whole thing. After they launched it, they kind of had to talk in circles. There really wasn't a whole lot to talk about beyond the actual launch and what it stood for. And they were kind of filling time after that, so I tuned out after a little while. But for the most part, it was a really interesting launch. So I'm curious to see what happens next. You know, like, what's the next venture going to be? What's the next launch going to be? Hopefully this one will be successful. This one was unmanned, but I think they're contemplating putting someone up in the next one, or possibly down the road. So cool. It'll be interesting to see what happens. And the other thing that I did manage to watch, which was another date night with Jocelyn, which was The Secret of NIMH on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen this in so long that I didn't remember it at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew the basics. I knew about the amulet, and I knew about the mouse and the rats. And I knew there
Lee
was...
Lee of the Stone.
Yeah, and I knew that there was this Nicodemus guy. So all the names and stuff sounded familiar. I even recognized some of the voice actors here and there. But I don't remember why it was so important, because it just felt like a lot of stuff jumbled together. Like, it really felt like a ripoff of about 8 different Disney movies.
Well, it was Don. Well, I think it was Don Bluth's
Don
Bluth. First,
yeah, no,
yeah, his first film post Disney. So I think it was one of the first big films in that style to be done outside of the framework of a Disney studio.
Right.
So
that's probably why it was so.
Probably why it got so much hype. So.
Yeah. So yeah. Because I don't. I mean, there's lots of stereotypical characters. There's some stuff in it that was neat, and it was. I mean, I know it's a kids' movie, so there's a certain amount of, you know, you've just got to let the suspension of disbelief kind of take you. I mean, I spent last week talking about a guy in a bat suit fighting crime. So I mean, there has to be that, you know, a certain amount of letting go. But they never explain the magic, and that's what I was so disappointed, because I mean, it looked cool. It was a neat aspect to it. I liked the fact that there was
nanotechnology.
Magical rats doing these magical things, but they explained how the rats became intelligent. It was a mental health institute that was experimenting on them, and they got smart, and then they learned how to read, and they escaped. So that's fine. But where does the magic come from? Like, they never explain it. They never even come close to explaining where the magic comes from. And I was just like, okay, I'm used to a little bit more, you know. In my cartoons as of late, so I was a little disappointed, or very disappointed, I guess, in that. And I guess that most people just, it's nostalgia. I mean, most people our age, we would have been kids when that came out.
That was actually, that was the second movie I ever watched on a VHS rented.
Mm.
The first movie was actually Dark Crystal. So.
Right. So I've got the time frame about right. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. It was around when everything was...
Probably around, you know, I think, what was it, 83, 84,
yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, so. I think it's right before Disney hit their giant stride.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, like I said, it was good. It was well, there were some points. The character animation was fantastic.
Yeah.
Some really good hand-drawn stuff.
The owl was just amazing.
Yes,
right?
The owl and Nicodemus is really cool. The kids were also really good.
Yeah.
I feel like some of the kids, some of the animators on the kids.
82. Sorry.
What's that?
82 came up. Sorry.
82. Right on. I feel like some of the kids, the animators on the kids, were probably people that used to work on kids at Disney.
Yeah.
That might have jumped ship to help Don Bluth out, because I could tell. Like, they reminded me of the kids from Robin Hood, the ones with the foxes. Anyway, I mean, like I said, it was good. It was enjoyable. But I felt like, wow, there was a lot of crap missing. I felt... You know, it was a little shy of what I wanted it to be, which is funny, because I mean, I know I had seen it at least once, if not a couple times before.
Yeah. NIMH stands for the National Institute of Mental Health.
Mental Health, right. Yeah. Right. Mm. So that kind of wraps it up for me for what I've been watching. What's been on your nightstand this week?
But generally, I picked this up about a year and a half ago, I guess. Jeff Lemire's Essex County. It was on the list for Canada Reads a couple of years ago, and they really promoted it around here at Strange Adventure stuff. So I picked up a copy, and it's probably, how big is it? It's quite the hefty volume. It's 510 pages.
Wow!
So it's quite the graphic novel, and it takes place over a couple of generations in this little area of Essex County, and nice little black and white graphic novel. It's hockey is one of the main themes in it, and you know, very Canadian. And yeah, it's a nice read overall. It's you know, have you read it yet or no?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I should drop it off for you to have a look at. It's actually, you know, yeah, I just, you know, when my computer's booting up in the morning or whatever, I'll take it down off the shelf and I'll pick through it and stuff. It's a nice little book worth checking out. You can probably find it in your local library as well if you, you know, if you haven't been able to track it down. So
cool.
But yeah, other than that, that's about the only thing that I've really been picking through when I'm reading something, other than, you know, flick through apps and stuff like that. But you know,
right on.
Yeah.
I don't have anything that I've been reading, but the podcast that I've been listening to over the last little while relates to comics. It's okay. Guys with Pencils, guyswithpencils.com. Okay. And they interviewed a local, Kate Leth, quite a while ago. They confessed in the opening part of the interview, when they dug into this topic, they bit off way more than they could chew. They knew that they had more people they wanted to talk to, and they wanted to build it up and put it all into one giant show and kind of give everybody a bit of a showcase. I haven't finished listening to the whole thing because, again, I keep on getting sidetracked by all these projects and stupid work keeping me from doing fun things. Basically what they wanted to do is they wanted to interview several people that are comic artists in the comic industry. Kate happens to be both. She works at Strange Adventures here local, and she also draws her own stuff.
Yeah, I got a little sketch here for you, and she did of Wilby from Coraline.
Oh, anyway. Cool. Right on. Yeah. And I really like her. Whenever I've run into her, she's always really fun to talk to. But the objectification of women in comics was what they wanted to talk to her and other people about. And it was sparked by a blog post that she had written a while ago about several different things, about the New 52 and costume changes and the fact that they didn't need to be changed, or they were changed for no other reason than to just show boobs, or, you know.
Like that Catwoman cover?
There's the Catwoman cover there, although they didn't talk about it. I know that was an example given in other situations, but I don't remember them talking about it on the show. What they talked about mostly was Harley Quinn from the Batman series, as well as the Batman Arkham City video game. There was a couple of other examples that they gave too. I mean, I think they mentioned Power Girl in jest here or there. Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was the other big thing that they were talking about. And Batwoman, I want to say, is one of the ones that she really enjoyed. I think that was it. But so she had lots of positive examples too, which I thought was one of the important things about the interview. It is not a rant fest. You know, they outline people that are doing it very, very right and people that are doing it very, very wrong. And they even say, like, just because an artist has drawn a cover and it gets a lot of shit does not necessarily mean that was the artist's decision.
Yeah.
She had outlined certain situations where local artists, I guess, that draw for big companies had received, you know, feedback from the editor, just like, no, you have to pull the zipper lower. And he's like, well, what? She's in a cat suit. Like, it's like the Tim Burton Catwoman. It's sexy as hell, and there's no skin except for her face.
Yeah.
You know, like stuff like that. And they're like, no, you got to give her a boob window, or you have to do something for the teenagers and all this kind of stuff.
Darwin Cook had a great Catwoman costume. Anyway.
Yeah, with the goggles and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they actually mentioned him in the interview. And it was really, really well done and really well thought out. I'm looking forward to finishing it because it was worth listening to, especially the Harley Quinn stuff, because it's the simplest thing. Like, she is now in a corset. And it laces up in the front, which makes no sense. And she's an acrobat. Well, find me an acrobat that can do anything when they can't bend over at the middle. Right? So it completely takes away her only ability, because otherwise she's kind of dumb. You know, she's she's batshat crazy. And she's in a abusive/codependent relationship with the Joker. They basically just turn her into like a gun-wielding thug, and she loses all of her interest. You know, she becomes a little bit more punky, a little darker, and that's about it. There was a lot of complaints about that costume change, you know, for no good reason. So it was a really good interview. Guyswithpencils.com. I think it's Guys with Pencils on Twitter as well. Really snappy name for a podcast about comics, and nice that they nabbed the URL for that too. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, go and check it out. And I have to listen to more of their stuff, but I don't think it's, I don't necessarily think that they're artists. I think that they're just really into comics. So you don't have to be like a web creator or a comic creator to be into the show. You can just kind of like geeky comic-y stuff, and I'm sure that they'll it'll appeal on some level.
Yeah, and she's got an interesting Tumblr going on, just kateordie.tumblr.com. So
fantastic. Yeah. I forgot about that site.
Yeah.
Awesome. Sorry, Kate. This is normally where we would read a couple of emails from our lovely listeners, but we don't have any emails this week. If you'd like to email the show, you can drop us a line at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Voicemails and Twitters are also tweets. I can never decide whether I want to say Twitter us or tweet us or send us a message. I don't know.
Ones and zeros.
Yeah. TheCitadelCafe@gmail.com. TheCitadelCafe on Twitter as well. Voicemails in MP3 format. If you please, before Peyton destroys the place. that brings us nicely and neatly to the end of the show, where we talk about the Internet Minute, which is where we talk about some of the cool things we found online. I have been spending a lot of time on DeviantArt lately, and I really only have one pick, and it is the DeviantArt Gallery for Marco Bucci. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly, Marco. I'll throw the link in the chat room right now. He has this really, really painterly style. A lot of kind of kid illustration stuff, big fuzzy monsters, but it looks like he paints it with a house brush. Like, it's just so visceral and fun, with lots of bright colors and really fun venues. But the guy also knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like, just because it's a big, you know, furry football shaped monster does not mean that the man doesn't know perspective and color theory. Beautiful, beautiful painting, and lots of really fun sci-fi stuff. Some fun cartoony Batman references here and there. Kids dressed up as Batman for Halloween, that kind of stuff. Really enjoy his work. So if you, we just got a message from Molly in the chat room. He paints this? I was like, yep, he paints this. This is all, I'd imagine digital painting from.
Well, actually, he does have a little picture of a notebook he's holding up at a park with a watercolor he's done of some stairs.
Oh, look, dude, anybody that is this good at digital painting knows how to paint in real life.
Yeah,
I can tell you that.
It's hard to tell which is which.
Yeah,
right?
There's probably a mix of both. There might even be some stuff that starts on canvas, gets scanned in, and then fixed, you know, or put on a different background or whatever.
Yeah.
But he is extremely talented, and I encourage anybody that's into sci-fi fantasy art to go check out his stuff. What's on your pick list this week?
Oh, just a couple of things. Actually, it's two new websites that have launched. One of them is kind of sad or awesome, depending on what angle you're coming from. It is an online dating site geared specifically for Trekkies, and it's called TrekkieDating.com.
Right on.
And you can go to that if you're looking to find your Gorn or, you know, whatever you're into. Ferengi, you know, someone who's got a tribal fetish, whatever. You know, you could probably find it there. And the other one is monsteruniversity.com/ed/. And it is 8 months out from the release of the Monsters, Inc. prequel.
Oh, right.
And Pixar has made this Monster University website, which I must say is actually, my wife used to work in, and still is actually in universities. And it is better than a lot of university websites I've seen.
This is awesome.
It's really, really cool. It's worth checking out. They even have an MU store where you can buy like baseball caps and stuff.
Oh, nice.
And two of the shirts they got there have four sleeves. There's a hoodie with four sleeves and a t-shirt. The t-shirt
that
apparently sold out.
Awesome.
And the hoodie is coming soon. But I'm wondering if they if those two are even being made available, because, you know,
if they're real or if they're just meant to be. Yeah.
Yeah,
I would want a hoodie with four arms. That is freaking wicked.
Yeah, so it's pretty sweet. The MU hat's pretty cool too. But yeah, just, you know, the campus life. They got maps there. They've got, you know, athletics and admissions and all that stuff. It really is quite cool. So I guess this is going to be where they're going to be doing all their social media and launching it. But like, it looks like a real campus. So again, it's worth checking out. Like, yeah. I would want to go to university, you know?
Absolutely. Anyway. It really does. It actually almost looks like the universities around here.
Yeah, I know.
Like, surprising that, I guess New England universities in the States would have a very similar vibe.
I wonder where's the fall, like in the main shot they have on the homepage, the trees are all changing color. I wonder if through it the winter they're going to be doing a winterized version of it.
Snowball fight in the quad, all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
What people, I mean, for our audio listeners, the colors of the leaves in these trees are like purple, blue, pink,
whatever,
orange. I mean, every color of the rainbow. That's awesome. There's part of me that, I don't know, doesn't want a sequel. Or a prequel or whatever. And there's part of me that's like, well, it's Pixar. They do a lot of things right. And I mean, this is a good start. I'll probably see it at some point.
Well, really, yeah. They have like the map of the actual campus and everything. So like they really doing a lot here to expand the universe. So I would think that as you go through the movie, building up to the movie, if you follow this stuff, you'll probably have a lot more insight in what's happening behind the scenes. So,
yeah. So, hey, what are the big flops that Pixar has had? Do we have a list? Cars 2.
Pixar?
I would think that would be considered a flop.
Yeah, probably by their standards.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a Monsters, Inc., and it wasn't Incredibles. It wasn't, you know.
And I'm not quite sure if...
I'm struggling to remember what they've come out with recently.
I'm wondering if, what was this? WALL-E, if that was a financial success or not.
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know,
That's a good question. I know I like it, but I'm an animator and an artist and a cartoonist, and as are you. So, I mean, I think we might see that through some rose-colored glasses that not...
Yeah, well, you look at something like, you know, you got Frankenweenie just came out last week, and it's apparently tanking. Like, the numbers are hitting, like, $11 million opening weekend.
Oh!
You know, Corpse Bride did, back in 95, did 19. Mm. And so, you know, it's tracking. Now, they have three big stop-motion films this year, so hopefully, you know, this is not going to be a trend that people move away from those. But we'll see.
Do we remember what Paranorman did?
Paranorman did opening weekend, I think it was something like 17. Huh. But not like and then I think Pirates did less than both of them, I think.
Oh, the one from
From Aardman.
Aardman, right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Did you see that one? No, I
have not. I haven't, getting out to many films, so I'm actually going to be picking it up at the video store this week to try and check it out, because
right on.
You know, it's stop motion, so. But let's see, first weekend's gross for this stuff. Wow,
$14 million for Paranorman.
Yeah. Okay. But Paranorman is just absolutely awesome. So. But,
cool.
Toy Story 3D double feature. I'm not quite sure what that was. That only did $35 million.
That's like a re-release, though. I mean, that wasn't anything new. That was just stuff coming, like, quote unquote, out of the Pixar vault.
Yeah, the lowest one they made was the first Toy Story, and the opening, well, the first run was $361 million, and then after that was $363 million for Bug's Life, but after that it's all north of $4 or $5 million. Toy Story 3 did like over a billion, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, what about WALL-E? Where did WALL-E land?
WALL-E did $532 million.
Wow.
So Cars did 461, but now with things like Cars, though, you got to take into account, like, that's a huge merchandising revenue stream for them, right?
Yeah. So what was Cars 2? Did that do very well?
Cars 2 did 559.
So wow,
that's still quite respectable.
Yeah, I kind of want to compare the opening weekends now to the overall gross, because you find out that Cars 2 probably made all of theirs in the opening weekend.
No, Cars 2 made 66 in our opening weekend. Cars 1 made 60.
Oh wow.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess I've got a little handy-dandy chart in front of me here now. But, the total grosses for Pixar for films is $7.24 billion.
Billion, wow.
Yeah, with a half a billion per film.
Huh. Well, okay, well, half a billion per film.
On average.
On average.
The average amount, you know, so.
And, oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Because, you know, what I wanted to know was, like, out of the overall gross for Cars 2, how much of it was made in the opening weekend before people knew that it wasn't great and started telling everybody else, like, actually, don't go see that in the theater. Like, because I mean, other things like WALL-E, I think it would be the opposite. It would probably have a lousy opening weekend, but then would continue on to do much better.
No, well, WALL-E actually had a lower opening weekend and actually did less. But now, after about 2009, you really got a, the 3D stuff really start coming into effect around 2009. So
yeah.
WALL-E might have been on the front end, but now you got ticket prices are up and, you also got a wider releases of these films too. So I think, probably it probably skews the numbers a fair bit,
But, yeah, interesting. It's all part of the whole box office mystery of the movie draft that they do on Twit, on Framerate and the NSFW show that we talked about a few weeks ago on the show. They always buy the kids' movies. And I mean, one of the things that they're watching is this new Santa Claus and the Guardians or whatever it is, coming out. And that is, that does not appeal to me in the least, but, it is one of the only animated movies that's coming out in and around the holidays. Mm-hmm. And you know it's going to make a lot of money because it's the one that parents can take their kids to go see.
Yeah.
I think
it makes some dark themes to it. There's something about the character in that, I guess, is like a shadow figure with, he's an actual being, but there's lots of shadows and stuff. Have you ever seen Nocturna? Some reminiscent about what they're trying to do with that, with what's happening with Nocturna.
I think I tried to watch Nocturna. Did I finish that? Nocturna is the one with the really big guy that's kind of...
Yeah, the really big guy and all the cats. And the little boy won't go to sleep and the darkness taking all the light and everything. If you get a chance to find that film, I recommend for the listeners to check it out.
I've seen at least part of it, but I feel like I had to download it. I don't think I got a chance to stream it or watch it on iTunes.
I have a copy of it here. I'll get it for you sometime. It's worth checking out.
Yeah.
There's some very fun animation and it's...
I remember really liking it, but I don't remember whether I finished it, which is weird because normally I would remember something like that.
Yeah, the company, I'm not sure if the company who made that are still around. I think it was a European, like Spain or something like that company that did it.
Yeah.
They did a Don Quixote as well as they did a really good short for this boy who had this robot pig. And the pig was like drink oil and stuff, and the pig looked like a normal pig, except, as big as a truck. But I guess the pig got sick, so he wanted to take it back to the creator, who actually was using these things as weapons. So anyway, I'm not quite sure. It was only a trailer, but I was like, this movie would be awesome, but I don't think it actually went much further than that. But.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I feel like that was the Nocturna French.
I think originally it was French or Spanish. Originally, I'm not quite sure.
Sometimes it's hard to tell. I find that European animation can be very distinct from North American. So right on. Well, that wraps up the show. This is the Sigil Cafe, as we mentioned from the start. We record every Wednesday evening at 7:30 Eastern on starcrossedonline.com/live. The music for the Sigil Cafe was composed by Kevin McLeod, and the podcast is, of course, available on demand via iTunes and our website. That website in question is thecitadelcafe.com, where you can find show notes written by me and sometimes by Jocelyn of all of the links that we talk about in the show. You can also go visit Jocelyn and the friends over at the Gamers In Podcast at gamersinpodcast.com. Please follow them on their Extra Life fundraiser. They're going to be doing a 24-hour gaming marathon to raise money for children's hospitals in the next 2 weeks. It's on the 20th, I believe, whatever that Saturday is. So I will be helping out with that. I will be doing some WoW dungeons, and I will be doing some producing. I'll be switching while doing some video stuff while Ryan and Jocelyn and friends play video games. Should be fun. So tune into that and find out more at gamersinpodcast.com. You can find the Sigil Cafe on Twitter, Facebook, and Google with just our name, the Sigil Cafe. And email is thesizzlecafe@gmail.com. It's just the Sizzle Cafe everywhere, including iTunes, which is one of the best ways for the podcast to reach new listeners. Leave us a review, give us a rating, and we will send you a shout-out right here on the show next time around. I cannot say that we don't have any right now because I forgot to check. Next week, I will remember to check and read them here if we have any. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan, and you can find my comic and pretty much all that I'm up to lately on starcrossedonline.com. And you can also find me on Twitter and Google Plus with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
Twitter under Peyton Francis, Google Plus, I'm there on the odd time. Facebook, and my website is cardboardtreehouse.com.
Have you gotten around to changing that up yet?
No, I haven't. I've just been head down, just go, go, go. So,
yeah, I'm going to have some time after HalCon, I think, in the next few weeks. So yeah, if you want to get together and check that out and maybe make some changes and get some help with the CSS, let me know, because I've been doing some of my own stuff as well, because I've got a website that I need to update, and it's all in the brain. So I mean, if I can transfer it to you through some way possible.
I'm also looking at maybe trying to do a Tumblr or something like that, but I need to be producing a lot more.
Tumblr is easy. It's just that you're right. You do have to make it really successful and worth your while. You kind of have to post a lot.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that Scotty has moved all of his postings to Tumblr.
So. Oh, has he?
Yeah, well, he's still updating his blog and his website and everything. But
yeah, but all of his daily stuff is Tumblr.
Yeah, his daily stuff is all Tumblr. No, I have it all in my Flipboard on my iPad. So nice. Whatever he does pops in there, which is awesome. So
yeah, but a lot of people are doing that. And that's the thing. I'm currently working on a WordPress blog, which is just joelduggan.com, which is, don't go there because it doesn't exist yet. it just points you to like about.me or something. But when that's up, I've got a plugin that brings my Tumblr into my blog.
Nice.
Because WordPress is such a pain in the ass to post to, and Tumblr is so damn easy that it's going to be a godsend to just post drawings on Tumblr and have them update to like Facebook and everywhere.
Awesome.
You know, it's going to be very, very easy. So I've been learning the back end and stuff like that, which is going to hopefully make for a smoother ride along the way. So you guys can look for that in the coming weeks. Also, I should not forget to plug HalCon, HAL-CON.com. That's the local sci-fi fantasy convention here in Halifax, and it's coming up on the 26th of October. I'm going to be a guest along with my friend Jules Faulkner and our friend Faith Aaron Hicks. We're all going to be doing a panel about webcomics. I need to email them and determine a time, which I just remembered that I didn't do today, so I'm going to do that right now. So that'll be happening probably on Saturday. It's a 3-day event. I'm going to be there all 3 days. I will be selling books. I will be selling a bunch of other stuff, including original art and some sketches. So if you want to pick something up or just come say hi, come check out HalCon in Halifax on October 26th.
And see you there. If you contribute to Kickstarter and you're local, could you pick up your copy of your book there?
It depends. People that have already paid for shipping, no. There are some people that have said, hey, you know, we're friends and I'll see you and we'll pick it up. And I've agreed to that. Then, yeah, that's totally fine.
Okay.
But there's not going to be anything ready. Okay. That's the other thing. Like, I really have only 2 weeks to prepare for HalCon. So all the stuff for the Indiegogo campaign, like T-shirts and buttons and sketches and stuff, it's really unlikely that they're going to be ready to go before HalCon. It's a good bet that they're going to happen the week after, in terms of, some of the simpler packages, definitely. Some of the more complicated packages, I really want to try to get everything out kind of like the first week in November. So it's arriving to people's places by Christmas, you know, before the Christmas mailing rush. So that's the plan anyway. And I have the volunteer help of a tall blonde, godsend will be helping me out with, you know, 500 books and boxes and buttons and everything else. So, it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of star-crossed merch in this apartment for a little while, but happy to have it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Have you been able to find any, not stop motion, time-lapse videos of Scotty drawing? I looked, but I haven't been able to find any.
There are a couple. You can't actually see him, but there's about 4 videos on YouTube of him drawing. One is of a very large cab driver.
Right, I've seen that one.
Yeah, there's another one, I think, of a squirrel or something on a tree. There's one of him doing a robot.
They're all digital though. It's all drawing.
They're all screen captured.
They're all like Sketchbook Pro stuff. Yeah. No, I just, cause I want to see him drawing with a brush on paper. Cause I look at it. I just kind of figured that he just kind of shakes his hand and stuff just kind of comes out.
Well, you know what?
It's so gestural and so scribbly.
Just ask him, you know?
Yeah. No, that's a good, I should do that.
Yeah. Cause he's always asking for suggestions for his warm-ups and stuff like that. So just say, you know, I don't want to watch you per se, but you know, can we see your hand, how you work?
Video or it didn't happen.
Yeah. It's like the opening of on the DVD for Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Right.
On the the special edition or whatever, they show Ralph Steadman actually writing out and drawing the title credit. Right. And that was on the DVD menu, just loop, right? I remember my roommate in college, Ryan, had that. And we sat there. We must have watched that for about a half hour.